Welcome to a response of a day for the 7th of Elul. We thank Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz, David Hachhauser, and the OU for giving us the opportunity to share with you probably mostly Shut Chatam Sofer Chelek Gimel Evan Ezra Aleph Simon Yutet, the third volume of Chatam Sofer, the first time he gets the Evan Ezra issues apparently. Response number 19, this is from the 7th of Elul of Kufpei He of 1825. And it deals with, and then God willing, we'll get to another short, very brief tshuva as well. But the question is about an issue that doesn't get discussed a lot. For one thing, it's a delicate issue to discuss, but it touches on issues about marriage and the concept of marriage in halacha and in Judaism in ways that we don't always get to. Meaning, there's the idea of how women, men and women get married, the importance of men and women getting married, and having nice and productive and fruitful relationships with each other. That's one issue. Then there's who we can't marry. You know, there's relatives, you can't have affairs with married women, there's all that. And among the people that we can't marry, there are also some issues with certain people who are not allowed to be baba kahal. It's not that they can't get married at all, but they can't marry ordinary Jews for reasons that are not always so clear. So examples of that that will come up in this response of a bunch are a mamzer. Mamzer or a mamzeret is the product of a relationship that was prohibited to the parents at a karet level or a mitah level. That would create a mamzer. And a mamzer is not allowed to marry in the Jewish people. So if you have a mamzeret, let's make the woman the mamzeret or the man as a mamzer, they can't marry regular Jews. They can marry converts. They can marry. There's all sorts of ways that they can deal with it. Another example that doesn't get spoken about a lot is what's called a psua daka. Psua daka is a man who has a wound in his private parts, in his, you know, in his testicles, basically, and or in the organs that are down in that part of the body, in genitalia. He's not allowed to marry ordinary Jews as well, and we're going to have some discussion of some of that because the case that was brought to the Rebbe Chatam Sofer was a poor man who had gotten either a ride or had traveled on a wagon, and it seems like, I think it's like a passenger, and it might be that he paid a lower rate or he's been done a favor. So in any case, while he's in this wagon, he rode sitting on some barrels. And when he was sitting on some barrels, as soon as he sat down, or he sat down hard, or there's a bump in the road or something like that, he felt pain in that area of his body. And after a while, he didn't do anything about it. After a while, he became bedridden, became ill, and the area became inflamed, that whole scrotal area, and he went to the city, to Pest. Pest is half the city of Budapest. Buda and Pest are actually sister cities, sort of like Minneapolis, St. Paul, but we call them Budapest, I think. That's my best understanding. And there, the doctors in Pest decided that one of his testicles needed to be removed. So the rabbi, writing the Chatam Sofer, says, I think we have a problem here, because I'm not allowed, I'm sure that he's allowed to stay with his wife. Because the pasuk of the Torah is lo yavo psua daka b'kal Hashem, they can't marry into the Jewish people, and the rabbi writing the Chatam Sofer says, I don't know that that's only about new marriages. It might be that they're not allowed to live as husband and wife. Here's always a man. The man wouldn't allow to be the husband of a Jewish woman. So it seems like the question had come up. And thank God, I don't think the question comes up as much as it used to today, because we can avoid men being damaged in that way. And we'll see that the Chatam Sofer has a big kula at the end as well. But the man writing the Chatam Sofer says, I know that many people rely on a Sifte Chachamim. Let's remember that a Sifte Chachamim is a commentary on Rashi. Rashi says many things, and the Sifte Chachamim comes to clarify points within Rashi. The Sifte Chachamim, Rashi and Chumash, on the pasuk of Lo Yavo Mamzer. So Sifte Chachamim, this is in Parsha Ki Tetzé, in Perakav Gimel, Pasuk Gimel. The Pasuk says, Lo Yavo Mamzer B'Kol Hashem, which literally means a Mamzer cannot come into the community of Hashem. The Rashi translates, the Rashi explains, Lo Yisai Yisraelit, he shouldn't marry Yisraelit. The problem is that this comes in the Torah after the previous Pasuk, where it spoke about a Psua Daka, where it spoke about somebody who had damage to his that area of the body, and Rashi there just explains to you what a psua daka is. Shiniftu or nidku beitzim shlo, that his testicles were either wounded or crushed or something like that, right? And he doesn't tell you that the phrase lo yavo means don't marry. So the Sifte Chachamim suggests, he argues that the reason why Rashi didn't do that is that Rashi was telling that the mamzer is actually worse than the psua daka, that the mamzer can't stay married to somebody who he's already married, whereas the Psua Daka can stay married to somebody who's already married. And that's why Rashi explained it there, because Rashi's point wasn't that you didn't know what the words meant. Rashi knew what the words meant. He was trying to say that Lo Yavo, in the case of a mamzer, means slightly more than it means by Psua Daka. That's why he expresses it here. That you would want to ask yourself, I would want to ask myself, how the Tzivtei Chacham knows that that's true, since the Torah uses the exact same words. But that's not our concern in the responsum yet. So I should just point out, because I don't usually quote Tzivtei Chachamim, he is a well-known commentary, a super commentary, it's called, on Rashi. It's Reb Shabtai Bass, was born in Poland in 1641, Torah scholar and a leader. He was a chazan. He was known as Reb Shabtai Bass, also known as Mishorer, as a singer, and whatever it is. And he wrote this work for Tzivtei Chacham, which is included in the Mikra Gedolot, and that's where many people know about it. So that's just a little bit about Rabbi Shabtai Bass, about the Tzivtei Chachamim, and this is the claim that he makes, that that's what's going on. Now, it happens to be that, as we're talking about it, in the case of a mamzer, it would have to be that he found out he was a mamzer once he was already married, right? And that, theoretically, I could have argued that was a distinction. That the mamzer couldn't stay, if it were true, the Zimtzi, the mamzer, and a Psua Daka, and you tell me the Psua Daka can't stay and the mamzer can't stay, one argument can be made is the mamzer was always a mamzer, it's just that we just found out he was a mamzer, and therefore we have to separate the wedding. That's because the wedding was never legitimate. But in the case of Psua Daka, you can have situations where a couple gets married and everything's fine in the marriage, and then sadly the man gets this wound, he becomes a Psua Daka. Then the question becomes, did the Torah mean to say not only can't he marry a Jew, it means that he cannot stay married? So theoretically, that would have been a way to read the Tzivtei Chacham. The problem is, the rabbi, the writing the Chatam Sofer, points out, and the Chatam Sofer agrees with him, that there are many sigyut in the Gemara that make it very clear that we don't think that's true. That we don't think that a Psua Daka, if somebody who is a classical Psua Daka, as far as the Torah cares about it, and so the example that would be easy to use would be a Psua Daka Bidei Adam. Psua Daka Bidei Adam is where, let's say, a man goes to war and they shoot off one of that body part of it, or, you know, God forbid, they torture him and they cut it off. So that would be a Psua Daka. That's a person who sadly said a terrible thing happened to him, and part of the terrible thing that happened to him is that he's not allowed to marry or to stay married to an ordinary Jewish woman. We'll get to other examples later in the responsum, but the Gemara seems to be very clear that that's true either of when it happened before they got married, or even if it happened while he was already married. Now, the Chassam Sofer points out the Tzivtei Chacham didn't get on his own. There was this line of thinking. If you look at the Be'er Sheva, which is an Acharon, a commentary on the Gemara, the Be'er Sheva has another book called Seid al Tadarach, and he quotes a previous book that said that as well, and then the Be'er Sheva said, but it's not true. So it seems like there was this recurring tendency to think that maybe a Psua Daka could stay with his wife if he was married at the time when he wasn't a Psua Daka, and then the injury happened later on. That's not the way we understand the sugya. Not only that, because I'm so fair, after a little bit of a reasoning that we don't have to get into, says not only that, he's pretty sure that the Gemara means and the Torah means that we also require Beit Din to require them to separate. But there are times when the Torah will tell us something is wrong, but if somebody's doing something wrong, we don't require others to intervene and to force them to separate or to stop doing whatever they're doing. But in this case, we would, both in the case of a mamzer. If we knew somebody was a mamzer, we would have to the extent that we had the Beit Din had the power to, the court had the power to, they would have to force the couple to separate. And to the extent that they come to know that somebody's a Psua Daka, and they have the power to, they'd have to separate them. It's just one of these tragic things that happen in life where it's not always true that somebody's at fault, and yet painful things occur, and this would be part of the tragedy of that situation. So instead, the Chassam Sofer wants to explain why Rashi spoke about the explain that lo yavo means don't marry, right, in the case of a mamzer, and didn't do it in the previous pasuk in the case of a Psua Daka. Now, I have to say, I'm not positive for my own purposes that I would have been so deeply troubled by the question, because I could imagine saying to myself, Rashi waited till the section was over. No, you can't do that. Sorry. All right, let's say it is a good question, because the next one is, lo yavo amoni v'moavi b'kal Hashem. So it could be that that answer doesn't work. So we need an answer, or we'd like an answer, for why Rashi chose here to express the fact that lo yavo means don't marry, but not earlier. So the Chassam Sofer, to explain that Rashi, he says, first I want to point out a machloket, a debate, a dispute between the Rambam and the Ravid in the laws of prohibited relationships, Isurei Bia, in the 15th chapter, where the Rambam holds, Ain lokid illa bekidesh ubal. To get malkot, you would need to have had a kiddushin and a be'ila, and the Raiva and his son infers it from the fact that it says in the cases of Mitzrim and Edomim, who also can't marry ordinary Jews, says the third generation can marry Jews. So you can't mean the third generation can just have straight up bia, like can just have relations outside of the bounds of marriage, because when would Hashem ever say that you can, yeah, it's fine to have relations outside of marriage? It's obviously untrue. So therefore, when the Pasuk says, Dorsh Tishi Yavul Lehem Bikal Hashem, must mean marriage. This is where Avram ben Arambam explained his father's view that the Lo Yavo must apply to where there was Kiddushin, that it's not a full violation of the prohibition if they were to just have relations with somebody. And the Ravid disagreed, because the Mishnah seems to agree with Avram ben Arambam's explanation, and the Ravid disagreed. He says there's a Gemara where it seems fairly clear that a mamzer who has relations with an ordinary Jewish woman without pretending that they got married, or without thinking they got married, here that too would be a violation of the Torah that would get him malkot. And then the Ravid adds, and it makes sense that it would be the relations, the act of sexual relations would be the problem, because you, what you're hoping for, the reason he says, the Ravid says, the reason why the Torah is prohibiting a mamzer is because from ordinary Jews, because you don't want to have more mamzer among the Jewish people. So I'm not clear to me personally that makes so much sense, because mamzerim can marry other people and then they produce mamzerim. But he's saying that you don't want too much mamzerus. And then he says, in the case of Ptsua Daka, because there maybe you said the Rambam was right about a man who has a wound in that area of his body, you might have said the same thing. We just don't want a lot. Well, you can't say the same thing, because him having relations with his wife would do nothing to the right, the baby would come out just fine. So that can't be the reason. So he says, no, the Rambam says, it's shalotiz ne ishto tachtav v'amamzerud rabetz, that you're worried that if he has a wound in that area, he won't be able to function properly with his wife in that area of their marriage. And that will tempt her. This is the assumption here, is that she has an interest in being satisfied in that way, that her sexuality also is one where she wants to be satisfied in that area. So if her husband's not able to do it because of a physical wound, she'll look elsewhere. And if she looks elsewhere, one of the ways you produce mamzerim is by married women having affairs from which they get pregnant. So since we want to avoid that, that's the way the Torah, that's what the Torah prohibited. So this Ravid is implying, is understanding that the prohibition, since it's worried about pregnancies, must apply to the act of intercourse, not to just marriage. So this is something that Rambam didn't actually mean. We all think he meant that he meant something else, which is not our issue right now, because we're trying to get back to whether this man can stay with his wife. But he says, in terms of the Ravid, he finds it an odd thing, because the Ravid gives a reason of, you don't want to have too many mamzerim, and you don't want her to have an affair. If that's true, then why is it that the halacha is, this is a clear, straight-up accepted halacha, that if somebody is what's called a psua deka bidei shamayim. Psua deka bidei shamayim is somebody who loses part of their genitalia, their testicles, that part of that whole area of their body, by virtue of something that's not man-made. Somebody gets ill, God forbid. Let's say somebody has, you know, God forbid, testicular cancer, and the doctors have to remove a testicle. We're going to get to at the end of this tshuva. But let's say a testicle falls away somehow. So forget that. But somehow, bidei shamayim, right? An example, I think they think if somebody was out in the sun too much, and that would destroy a testicle. However, it would work. But the halacha is clear that that kind of a person is not a psua daka for the purposes of this prohibition. That's not included. So if that's true, the Chazal just says, I don't understand what the Rebbe's talking about, because that man's wife would also have these same issues. And it's a clear Gemara in Yevom and I have a bet that a psua daka bidei shamayim can get married. Also, he says, and this is kind of, to me, part captures some of the unclarity about mamzerim. He says, the Rebbe says, well, the Torah prohibited mamzerim from getting married or having, in his view, having sexual relations with Jewish women because you don't have more mamzerim. But the Chazal just says, but if you didn't make it a prohibition, we wouldn't care about having more mamzerim, because let's remember, the only thing that the mamzerut affects, now you could say, we want to punish parents who have relationships that are prohibited to them. We want them to understand that they are damaging those descendants from those acts forever, right? I can imagine that. So that would be the answer to the question that the Chassam Sofer is asking, but the Torah never says that quite. The Torah just says, a mamzer can never be ba bikal Hashem, can never have relations with or get married to Jewish women, or Jew or Mamzei wrote can't have relations with or get married to Jewish men, but the Chassidus says, but as far as the Torah tells us about it, the only issue is that their children will be more Mamzei, will be Mamzerim. But without knowing this issue, I wouldn't have known that there'd be a problem with it. Why do I care there are a lot of Mamzerim? So fine, there are a lot of Mamzerim. So I think the answer could have been, even the Chassidus Sofer, the answer could have been just that the Rebbe knows that it's bad to be a Mamzer because a Mamzer is a relation as a product of a problematic relationship. And that's what he says. That's actually sort of what he says. He says the Rebbe isn't here to be Dorish Tama Dekra, to give a reason. It's that we all know that a Mamzer is Mitoav. Right? We all know that a Mamzer is not something to have around because the Torah says they can't marry people. So we know there's something wrong with a Mamzer fundamentally, right? So that's where the Ravid's coming from. The Ravid says we want to make sure there aren't more Mamzerim because we have already come to understand there's something problematic about Mamzerim. So that's the way he answers that question. That would be true. Doesn't quite answer the Psuadaka question, right? If Psuadaka's wife is going to have affairs, because then you're being Mamzer Mamzerim, and that's it. Now, for the Rabbi, says Chassam Sofer, the question isn't such a hard, isn't such a question, because the truth is, the Torah already prohibited, I think at the same level of prohibition, extramarital, non-marital relations. Meaning the Rambam is one of the few Rishon who holds that, there are others who agree with him, but the Rambam is the first and is well known for it, who holds that if a man and a woman, if a woman has relations, has sexual intercourse, a Jewish woman, has sexual intercourse without being married, right? If she's married and she has relations with somebody other than her husband, that's an extramarital affair, and that's a prohibition at a very high, serious misa level. Theoretically, a court would put her to death for that. She has relations, but she's unmarried. You might say, oh, what's the problem with that? So everybody agrees that there's a rabbinic problem with that. The Rambam held it's a violation, lo tihye kadesha bivno Yisrael. And for men, it's lo yeh kadesh, that the Torah, when it says a kadesh or kadesha, people often will translate as one of those sacred prostitutes, one of the prostitutes for Avodah Zarah, who were used to do the sexuality, was used as part of the worship of idols. But the Rambam held that may be the original meaning of it, but in the Torah's legislation, it applied to any case where a Jewish man or woman was having relations outside of marriage, when they're not married to each other. If that's true, then the Rambam could hold that a Psua Daka who got wounded while in a marriage could stay in that marriage because there the wife has some other reason she can't get married. Meaning the Rambam could argue, Ravi, you're saying that you're worried that the wife is going to go have an affairs. She's not allowed to have affairs because she's a married woman, right? So that would be sort of the answer that he's suggesting for the Rambam. Whereas Rashi and the Ravid, who hold that Biyatznut is a lower-level prohibition, here you wanted to establish an ordinary promiscuous relationship. Relations outside of the bonds of marriage is a prohibition, but a lower-level prohibition. Then you could say in the case of Suadaka, or in the case of a Mamzer, you wanted to make sure that they understood, that they can't have relationships at all. There is some discussion about whether when a man loses one of his testicles, but loses it completely, whether that's a psul. Meaning, let's suppose that the man has both of them, but one of them has become so wounded, it doesn't function anymore. That's a psua daka. That is a man who fulfills this category of a psua daka. But what if the doctors end up, it ends up removing the wounded and the no longer functioning testicle completely? There were Rishon HaUel, not the Rush. The Rush disagrees, and not the Rambam. The Rambam disagrees, but there were Rishon HaUel that might be okay, because the man as he is now has the daka that he has, the beitzim that he has, the beitza that he has, the remaining testicle that he has is fully functioning, and that might be good enough. That was a suggestion, but it's not the way the Rambam holds. No, if the man is wounded by people, then even if it's been completely cut off, it doesn't matter. He's up to a daka. Whereas b'dei shamayim, if it happens something naturally by an illness, by some Hashem having it happen, so that person will be okay, even if it's both of them that are removed. So that doesn't seem to help either. So we've tried suggesting that maybe he can stay married because there's a stay married provision. Then we tried maybe if the whole testicle was removed, that would help him out. None of that has worked. So the end answer he is, in our situation, he says, I can look at it because is this considered bidei adam or bidei shamayim? Because if you could say, well, he sat on those barrels and the barrels knocked into him and that's what did it, then that would seem like it's bidei adam, because they're man-made barrels and it's a man-made wagon and he sat down on a man-made wagon, man-made barrels. I could say that produced a unfortunate wound and he's stuck because it's bidei adam. But But the Chasam Sofer says, but that's not accurate, because if the man had at that point come before, he said, you know what, I sat down on the barrels and I wrote it, and it was very painful, and now I have continuing pain in that area of my body, we wouldn't say they have to separate from his wife, because as far as we know, he's still a fully functioning, he's got fully functioning genitalia in that sense, so that's not the problem. What's the problem? The problem is that later on it became inflamed, then he got ill, and then he got bedridden, then he went to the doctors and they removed it, right? So the Chasam Sofer says, you're right. It's true that that was the cause. That was the thing that caused the event. But he quotes a pasuk in Mishlei, I think it is Sidim Pachim. There's a pasuk Mishlei, Sidim Pachim, Mishlei 22:5, Sidim Pachim Biderach Ikesh. The coals and things like that get in the way of a stubborn person. So the Chasam Sofer says, this guy was sort of like that. It qualifies for that because he didn't go to the doctors. He didn't do anything about it, right? He'd gone to the doctors early, they might have been able to heal it. So if that's true, then it's he himself neglecting it. He got sick and he left it aside. And it's and there's an argument to be made there then that even according to Rashi, we would call it bidei shamayim, meaning it's really a punishment from Hashem for whatever, or it's coming from Hashem. The instigating incident did not destroy the testicle that was removed. The instigating incident caused some kind of a damage, some kind of a wound, and then he left it. Now that has, to me, lots and lots of ramifications for how we understand various things. This halacha for sure, but another halacha as well, as to what we consider man-made, what we consider coming from Hashem, and what we consider human neglect. So if somebody gets a wound and they ignore it, is it that, nature happened? Or is it that, no, we think of the rest of what happens to that as being bidei shamayim, and bidei shamayim some kind of a reaction to this person's neglect? So that's all not issues directly for our tshuva, but fundamentally he comes out and saying that he thinks in this case, this man can be considered a psua daka bidei shamayim. He can consider this wound to have come from Hashem, and a psua daka bidei shamayim doesn't have to separate from his wife. Now, at the end, he said, it's not that he thinks that that's exactly true. He thinks this is an argument to be made that way. There's an argument to be made that way, then that means the court doesn't have the right to force the couple to act according to their view. The majority view, the general view would be, he's a psua daka, he's gotten this wound, it's very sad, but the Torah says a psua daka can't be can't be married to a Jewish woman, for maybe the reasons the Ravid said, they were worried about the health of the marriage if he's not able to perform, maybe not. That's not part of this ruling, and there's no way to determine issues of tama dekra of the reasons for psukim. But you've got this idea that he's psua daka. Never the chatzav zomer thinks we should be telling them that they need to know that the likelihood is that they're not allowed to stay married. The likelihood is that the Torah thinks they should get punished for staying married because it's supposed to follow the prohibition in the Torah, and that gets into, as I said at the beginning, all these issues of marital sanctity and what it is to have a good marriage and not a good marriage. The rabbi is at least saying that part of putting together a proper Jewish marriage, that each partner to the marriage is supposed to be finding enough satisfaction to protect them from various sins, and that's a whole discussion of its own. So the Chatzim Sofer's basic ruling for the 7th of Elul of Kuf Pei Hei of 1825 was that the couple should be told that the majority view is that they should have to separate, but if they stay together, the courts shouldn't do anything about it because we can't coerce people when they have a valid halachic claim to make about their situation. And that has complications of its own as too, because what do we consider a valid halachic claim or not? So the Chatzim Sofer is saying, I think that the doctor's removing the testicle after it got inflamed and infected, after he got a wound in it, is close enough to being bidei shamayim, to be considered that Hashem did it, that we can't be so sure that it's really this, that it's really bidei adam, that it's really caused by human impact and human influence, and therefore we can't force them to separate. Okay, since we have some extra time, we get a chance to also learn from a brief responsum of Chaim David Halevi's from Chelek Bet, the second volume of Aseilat Harav, Siman Nun Gimel, responsum number 53, and this is about Yetziah Lachul, going outside of Eretz Yisrael, outside the land of Israel, to greet one's Rebbe. It doesn't say it in the responsum, but it feels to me like it might have been the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and there, as we've seen before, Chaim David Halevi doesn't give years on his tshuvot. He says he's responding to a letter from the 7th of Elul. Doesn't give you the year, so I don't know what exactly it is, and it's kind of an interesting thing because it's apparently an Israeli, If I had to guess, I would have said a Sfardi just because Rav Chaim Zalman was the Sfardi chief rabbi of Israel, but maybe not. And he's responding to somebody who's got a Rebbe, maybe not the Lubavitch Rebbe, maybe yes, who wants to go visit his Rebbe, which is interesting because that whoever it is doesn't ask his Rebbe this question, right? He doesn't. So that would be, to me, more reason to go to the Lubavitch Rebbe because he couldn't get in touch with the Lubavitch Rebbe, but he also doesn't ask then, you know, some important Lubavitcher rabbi. The Lubavitchers certainly had then and certainly have now post-scheme of their own, people who understand their understanding of how halacha works, and they could have ruled for him. But he turns to Rav Chaim David HaLevi, which I think is such an interesting thing to watch. So here's the story. The man wants to go, 7th of Elul, and he wants to go outside of Israel to wherever the Rebbe was, let's assume for now that it was Crown Heights, for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Rav Chaim David HaLevi says, since it's such an urgent matter, I'm going to answer you, you know, I'm running to answer you. So in this case, 3 weeks away from the event that was important was a sense of pressure on the tshuva. We've seen other tshuvot that take months to get around. So I'm rushing to answer you. Can you go out for the Chagim outside of Israel to greet your Rebbe, to hang out in your Rebbe's court, as it were? Chaim Levi reminds us, and I think many people forget this because it's become so customary. Now, there may be good reasons for every time that it's done, but it's become so customary that he reminds us that in halacha, one isn't allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael so simply. It's a very serious issue about leaving Eretz Yisrael, ever. Someone that is in Eretz Yisrael, before one can go out, one has to think about whether one is allowed to leave. The seeming reasons are, lo hutra ela lamei Torah olisa isha. That if you're living in Eretz Yisrael, so you could talk about visitors who go to Eretz Yisrael for a visit, they might have an easier time because they only went in for Aliyah LaRegel, let's say, for visiting Yerushalayim for the Chag. But and we'll get to them in a second. But the reasons that are given for being allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael are to learn Torah or to find a wife. Or if there's something that non-Jews are stealing from Jews or have taken from Jews and you want to get it back, that's a third possible reason. And all of those, and this is the Rambam Paskas this in the Laws of Kings at the end of the Mishnah Torah, in the 5th chapter, the 9th paragraph. In all of those cases, it has to be with the intent to return. But since this guy, so now, says the Chaim David HaLevi, this guy's going to be in the chatzer of his Rebbe, to be in the court of the Rebbe, to witness the Rebbe, to see what goes on there. And he said to Rav Chaim David HaLevi that when he goes, he gets this sense of sanctity and of purity, right? He gets religiously uplifted for doing it. So theoretically, you could talk about people going to Uman, and then, you know, the people who do that, you could say that they can make the same argument, and then Rav Chaim David HaLevi's heter here would apply to him as well. He says, I think it seems like it's okay because it's similar to leaving to learn Torah, which is an important expansion of that idea. It's not only the text of Torah that you have to learn, it's that even just learning about how best to keep the Torah would seem to qualify that if the best place for somebody to do that was outside of Eretz Yisrael, they would be allowed to leave to go do it for that purpose, and then they'd have to plan on coming back as long as this man plans to come back. But, he says, you're telling me you want to go out not just for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you want to stay until after Sukkot. So that, he says, I think I have a problem with it. And here's what I want to explain to you. When the Beis HaMikdash was standing, you had a Torah mitzvah to be in Yerushalayim for the three regalim, for Sukkot, for Pesach, and for Shavuot, right? That's the mitzvah of Aliyah LaRegel, and to show up at the Beit HaMikdash. So if this was all going on, and you have willing one day soon, in the time of the third Beit HaMikdash, and let's say the Rebbe is still in, wherever he is, Crown Heights or Uman or wherever the Rebbe is, so then there would be a mitzvah in the Torah not to stay at the Rebbe's court, but to go to Yerushalayim. When the Mikdash was destroyed, so that mitzvah in the Torah went away, the Jewish people continued showing up because they were demonstrating their love of Jerusalem. So you got a bunch of sources that point out that people used to come to Yerushalayim even long after Beit HaMikdash had been destroyed, and they would stand around in the what we call the Rechavat HaKotel, in the courtyard of the Kotel, on Maravi, because the tradition of the Shekhinah is always there in some sense. You have Midrashim about it. There's a Midrash on the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, about Yafarayati Einayich Yonim. Hinak Yafarayati, you're so beautiful, your eyes are like doves. The Midrash says, just like a dove doesn't forget its nest, it always comes back home, the Jewish people continue to come back even though the Beit HaMikdash has been destroyed. They've not gotten rid of the three regalim of showing up. And Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, even though he went to Yavne after the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, and that's where he made the yeshiva that continued after the destruction of the Second Temple, he would go to Yerushalayim for the Chagim, even though there was no temple there. The Maharat Zchayas was much, much later, on Maseches Nedarim, also said that right after the Korban, after the destruction, Jews kept going Aliyah L'Regla. That's true, says Rav Chaim David Halevi. You want to leave now, and you want to be outside of Eretz Yisrael, and you want to get rid of the custom of going to Yerushalayim for the Chag. He says, I think you can't do that. I said, you want to go? He says, go for a Shani Yom Kippur. He's got to have to do that, but I think you have to make sure to be back for Sukkot, and that is the way he rules. So that's an interesting comment on, first of all, who we turn to for Pesach and when. Then it's a reminder that the idea of getting to Eretz Yisrael and to Yerushalayim for Chagim is really a very great idea. And to the extent that it's possible for people to do it, it is, Rav Chaim David Halevi telling us, something very important to do. So important that for a Jew who lives in Israel, who's thinking of leaving in Israel for the Chagim, Rav Chaim David Halevi seems to say, no, you're not supposed to leave Israel for the Chagim. And that is, those are two responses a day, a double portion of response a day, one longer, one shorter, for the 7th of Elul. But thanks to the OU, Rabbi Jacob Romans, David Hochhauser. Have a great day.